Before I was a Scientologist, I never agreed with psychiatry. And then when I started studying the history of psychiatry, I started realizing more and more why I didn't agree with psychiatry. And as far as the Brooke Shields thing is, look, you gotta understand, I really care about Brooke Shields. I think here's a wonderful and talented woman. And I wanna see her do well. And I know that psychiatry is, it's a pseudoscience.
But Thomas, she said that this particular thing helped her feel better, whether it was the antidepressant or going to a counselor or a psychiatrist. Isn't that enough?
Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. It turned out to be a feisty one. The president seemed to relish the give and take, which produced some startling and surreal moments. He even suggested at one point that Osama bin Laden is living quietly in Washington, D.C., home to the powerful woman he called Iran's enemy. You called Secretary of State Clinton an enemy of Iran. Do you consider...
assembled. Yet, in his first interview with an American reporter in more than a decade, Saddam Hussein remains defiant. Defiant even in the face of an impending war that seems certain to end his rule and quite possibly his life. We met him on Monday in Iraq's oldest and largest presidential palace at a time when the UN arms inspectors have accused him of having prohibited missiles.
He drew hostile responses. David Duke, who was a white supremacist, who scared the heck out of everybody when he ran for public office, did better than was expected. Was an unusual character. He had a kind of a schoolboy appearance about him. He was a rather nice looking man. Nothing offensive.
There you have it. A couple of dictators, a world famous actor calling psychology pseudoscience, and Phil Donahue saying that a white supremacist is not offensive, kind of a schoolboy looking guy. They were all interviewed by American journalists, not all actual news anchors. Phil Donahue was basically a daytime talk show host, and none of them were pressured to leave, get off the air. But for some reason, Joe Rogan is under attack. He must be dismissed. What is happening? Why is skepticism under attack?
Because it's Friday.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? It is Friday!
Well, it is Friday once again, and it is my goal, my mission, my ambition, my everything that ends in ition to make sure that this is the best Friday ever for you. Now, I know that's a tall task, and I'm probably not going to pull it off, but hopefully at a minimum, this will at least make your Friday a little better, send you off into the weekend, with some turbojets, just flying into the weekend, just standing a little taller, back a little straighter, head held a little higher. That's what this is about. I'm Jason Wright, and this is the Jason Wright Show, and thank you for joining me on the Best Friday Ever episode. This is just my little weekly bookend that I do to kind of recap the week, let you know some things I've been thinking about, as well as some things that are coming up on the Jason Wright Show, and basically just whatever floods into my mind at the time. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about this whole Joe Rogan thing. How about that, huh? I mean, there's some knives coming out for the king of podcasting. And I wanted to give a little bit of a take on this from my humble perspective. Okay, so first of all, the way I have approached this thing, and by the way, I'm not a diehard Joe Rogan fan. I am one of the YouTube clippers, and what I mean by that is I discovered Joe Rogan's podcast, like so many of you out there probably, just by all of the different YouTube clips that are out there. I mean, that is what has driven so much of of Rogan's traffic is he creates these clips. He's videoed his podcast for a long, long time, and he's been at it a long time. I mean, he is literally a pioneer in the podcasting business. But I've never been a diehard Joe Rogan fan. I don't want to say fan. I'm just a listener. That sounds better. But I got to say, all of a sudden, whenever he just blew up as the undisputed king of podcasting, I started tuning in every once in a while. I bet I've probably listened to a total of less than 5 full Joe Rogan episodes. But one that I did check out was the one he had with Dr. Robert Malone, which is kind of what's caused all the stink lately, and I'll kind of connect some of those dots. I actually wrote about Dr. Malone in the Vitruvian Letter, and if you haven't subscribed to that, you can do that at jasonrightnow.com. That's my weekly newsletter. And I think I titled it something like, Who the Heck is Robert Malone? And he was coming under all this attack, and it came after appearing on Joe Rogan's podcast. So I'm like, what is going on? Who is this guy? Is he a wacko? Is he out there? And then now you have the whole dust up with Neil Young wanting to have his music taken off Spotify if they don't get rid of Joe Rogan. And then Joni Mitchell jumps in. She wants to have her music off of Spotify. I think Brene Brown has said she doesn't want any of her messages on Spotify if Joe Rogan's there. And I'm like, what the heck is happening? And what I'm seeing with, and by the way, just a forewarning, this is not going to be a left versus right, conservative versus liberal, tyrant versus libertarian argument. I really want to approach this in a different way because look, there's enough places you can go to listen to the fist fight that is breaking out in with this whole issue with Joe Rogan and people taking sides from Brian Stelter at CNN, saying what he's saying, and then all the others. That's not what this is. What I want to do is kind of just unpack this from a thoughtful mindset of what's going on, and what should we look for, and then how do we kind of move through these waters of just weirdness that we see, and especially in this instance, because there's something going on, and I'm going to actually reference a book that I've just completed by Adam Grant, one of the great thinkers of our time, a young, unbelievably successful, and heralded professor at Wharton, at the University of Pennsylvania, the Wharton School of Business. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some things that as I read it, which by the way, this book came out way before any of this dust up happened. So it's kind of bizarre to see what's taking place right now. But anyway, so let's back up a little bit. So what I'm seeing with Joe Rogan is very similar to what seems to have happened with Jordan Peterson in a way. You have a bunch of people that are attacking someone for seemingly political beliefs that aren't there. So let's just take the issue of Jordan Peterson for a moment. Now, if you're on the other end of this microphone and you're listening and you know nothing about Jordan Peterson, but you've heard of him, my assumption would be that you probably think he's some sort of an ultra right-wing philosopher, kind of a Burke type guy, you know, that a William F. Buckley kind of guy that is out there preaching and writing and kind of like a conservative intellectual of some sort. Well, if that's what you think, you'd be wrong. Jordan Peterson, up until he became famous for standing up against the language laws that were being codified in Canada, and I won't go into all that detail. Go do the research if you want. You can actually go research you can go look on YouTube the very first YouTube video that Jordan Peterson, that kind of launched him into this whole arena of being one of the thought leaders of our time and philosophers that people listen to. And you'll see that this is a mild, meek-mannered guy that will tell you and has said over and over, he probably leaned further left. But because of some of his ideas being contrary, because they're on the surface level, if you just take things at the surface, visceral, emotional level, then you can attack him as in his case was the whole issue with pronouns, that sort of thing. And he got lumped in with this ultra right wing type group or thought, and that's just not who Jordan Peterson is. Well, now Joe Rogan. I mean, we're talking about Joe Rogan. Okay, first of all, and this will, I'm gonna tie this to the book that I've read, because I think that it's weird how exactly what is happening with Joe Rogan, Adam Grant writes about in this book, Think Again, which I highly recommend anyone read, just who's interested in actually being a better thinker and trying to kind of manage the CPU that is our brain and have better and more meaningful conversations, which is something that I'm really interested in these days. So Rogan is the least political guy that you could ask for on a podcast. And in fact, if he did lean any direction, it would have to be to the left. I think some of that, just listening to, again, to the clips and all the news that's happening, I think that the modern media and just kind of the what's happening in the country, and again, I'm going to do my best to make this conversation neither left or right. Just, this is just observatory from trying to be, and I do have my thoughts, I do have my views, and those of you who listen to the show, a lot of you know where I stand on these issues. But those of you who don't, just I hope that you leave this not having a clue where I am on the political spectrum, for the purposes of you just listening through this with an open, objective mind. So Rogan actually once said that if he were to vote, I think it was in the 2016 primary, he would, or the general election, if he were to make it, he would have voted for Bernie Sanders. He had Bernie Sanders on his podcast, and he interviewed Bernie. He liked Bernie. He challenged Bernie. And Joe Rogan, here's the cool thing about him. I have heard him say multiple times, I'm not a political guy. I think he's even like been very self-effacing about it, saying that he's like an idiot about it. He said, I don't know anything about politics. The genesis of the Joe Rogan show was Joe Rogan just sitting down after, I think, comedy shows with his fellow comedians and just talking and recording the conversations, and people liked listening. And that was before that's before you listened in on conversations. And essentially that's what a podcast is, like Rogan's, like what I do every Tuesday. That's just a conversation between myself and a guest. And you get to just listen into a conversation. And yes, there is an interview component to it. I'm asking questions, but it's not some interview like you'd see on a newscast, say like CNN, NBC, or ABC, where there is a list of questions that a group of producers have vetted and determined that these are the questions that our viewers need answers for. So you, news anchor, ask these questions, and then you exercise your talent as an anchor by finding the nuance, finding the details that are hiding beneath the headline. That's your job. That's what makes you a good anchor, interviewer, reporter, whatever the case may be. But there's some sort of a thought process into, I can see them all. I mean, look, they have these news meetings, right? They're all in a conference room. The producers are saying, hey, what's going on in the Middle East? What's going on in Europe? What's happening with COVID? And they have to distill everything down into a 30-minute news program that's nothing but sound bites. And each topic is so short that it's like, you know, here's this side, and here's where we stand, and boom, that's it. It's kind of shotgunned out at you, and that creates the narrative. And that's another thing, too. A lot of the narrative, a lot of what has been said prior to this topic, it has to be followed so as to maintain a sense of consistency between with the news organization, right? Okay, all of that, Joe Rogan is free from all of that. He does not have to abide by any of that. It is Joe Rogan asking questions that Joe Rogan is curious about. And as it turns out, there are millions and millions and millions of people that are curious about the same things that Joe Rogan happens to be curious about. And I think the reason why is because Joe Rogan doesn't go into an interview with an ideological bent or mindset. So what he's done, and I think this is why he has become so popular, is that he's not going out going, all right, I am a die-hard anti-big government libertarian, classical liberal, and I want to go find someone who is going to confirm my beliefs from a philosophical standpoint. And so therefore, I'm going to go get Ben Shapiro to sit in my chair, and we're just going to have echo chamber this thing. That's not what Joe Rogan does. What Joe Rogan does is he researches the information. He tries to process it. And then, unlike you or I, Now, I've had this one of the coolest things about this podcast. It's one of the most exciting things. If you're like me, if you're a naturally curious person and you truly want to learn, I was doing research on creatine a while back. And in my research, I found Dr. Jose Antonio's research and started looking at some of the papers he had written, some of the videos that he had done, some of the keynotes he had done. And so I reached out to him. I said, hey, I'm doing this research on creatine. I've heard that 5 milligrams a day can be one of the most beneficial things you can do for longevity and for a whole other host of benefits. Would you please come on my program and answer some questions and talk to me about it and then let my audience basically listen in? And Jose Antonio was like, absolutely, Jason, let's do it. And so you can go listen. I think it's like episode number 119 is Dr. Jose Antonio. And I mean, this is a guy that is a Forbes contributor. This is whenever Forbes is doing a spot on nutrition, supplementation, and sports nutrition, sports science, he's one of the guys they reach out to and go, hey, Dr. Antonio, we've heard this. What are your thoughts? And they quote him in Forbes magazine. And so I get to now go to people like that to get my questions answered. Well, take that up 100-fold. And you've got Joe Rogan, who, if he's reading an article, he's looking at research papers, and he's wanting clarification, he can go to the foremost experts in the world and say, hey, will you come on and have a conversation with me? And that's what he does. He's not trying to confirm. He's trying to learn. And I think that's the biggest difference between Joe Rogan and so many other news outfits, just commentators in general who draw the line of sand and say, I'm on the right, I'm on the left. Joe Rogan, he just has conversations with everyone. And so as someone who, as I mentioned earlier, is not a diehard, longtime Joe Rogan fan. You know, I don't wear graphic tees, have tatted sleeves, shave my head and do MMA and watch him commentate on MMA fights. I had not seen Joe Rogan on a regular basis since News Radio, whenever he was on that show. And that was whenever I was in high school. So I'm not a diehard Joe Rogan guy. But I do know that one of the things he does is he has people on there, because he's had people on there. I don't agree with a hell of a lot that Bernie Sanders has to say, but I don't hate Joe Rogan for having Bernie Sanders on. I didn't identify Joe Rogan's politics with Bernie Sanders, even after Joe Rogan said he would vote for Bernie Sanders. I didn't do that. Because I knew just the surface level of Joe Rogan that I knew was that this is a guy that has not only Bernie Sanders, but he'll also have Jordan Peterson. He's also had Ben Shapiro. He's also had Jack Dorsey. Pick the name out of a hat of a world opinion maker, thought leader, you name it. And if Joe Rogan is curious about something that person is an expert on or a perceived expert, then he will absolutely check into him. So he had Robert Malone on, and now this has just, and this was a few weeks back, and I knew it was going to be I don't know why, just instinctively, when Robert Malone came, when Dr. Malone was on Joe Rogan, I think it was, I had read an article in maybe The Atlantic or something. I think I referenced it in the Vitruvian Letter. As soon as I read that article, I knew that this was going to happen. I knew they were going to try to, and by they, I mean the, you know, there are two sides of this whole pandemic issue, and the side that is absolutely pro-mandate, pro-vaccine, pro-government intervention, pro-government solving the problem, all those things. And again, none of that is meant to be said with a negative tone, okay? I'm just trying to be, that whoever that person is that you think of, I knew they were going to come after Robert Malone. They had already kind of started that, and then that cadre of people would thus come after Joe Rogan. And so it makes you wonder, and here's the question I have for you. Do you think it is more what Joe Rogan is saying? Because Joe Rogan's not saying a lot. Joe Rogan, he asks a ton of questions. He drills down with questions. So he's not, if you're constantly asking questions, then how are you misinforming? And we'll talk about his whole, when he got COVID and how that all went down and the horse dewormer and whatever. We can talk, I may touch on that a little bit, but essentially as far as his show and his platform goes, he just asks questions. Now, I'm going to pull this up real quick here. Let's see here. I want you to hear that the guy that has really caused the stink, Dr. Robert Malone. There we go. Okay. So this is the guy. Now, I'm just going to, let's see. This is, all right. All right. So who is Robert Malone? Well, this is from his website with his biography. It says, I'm an internationally recognized scientist / physician and the original inventor of mRNA vaccination as a technology, DNA vaccination, and multiple non-viral DNA and RNA / mRNA platform delivery technologies. I hold numerous fundamental domestic and foreign patents in the fields of gene delivery, delivery formulations, and vaccines, including for fundamental DNA and RNA / mRNA vaccine technologies. I have approximately 100 scientific publications with over 12,000 citations of my work per Google Scholar with an outstanding impact factor rating. I have been an invited speaker at over 50 conferences, have chaired numerous conferences, and I have sat on or served as chairperson on HHS, Health and Human Services, and DOD, Department of Defense committees. I currently sit on a non-voting member of the NIH National Institute of Health ACTIV committee, which is tasked with managing clinical research for a variety of drug and antibody treatments for COVID-19. I will let you go to, let's see, this is rwmalonemd.com. I will link that in the show notes so you can just go check out and see exactly who Robert Malone is. But if you're Joe Rogan and you're trying to figure out the answers to vaccines and their efficacy and should we take them, should we mandate them, whatever, based on just what I wrote you, would it be so far-fetched to say, maybe I'll reach out to this Dr. Robert Malone guy? And he did. And just because that has happened, now all of a sudden, there's this uproar that Joe Rogan should be canceled. Get him off the air. He's saying things that are this whole misinformation. That's what's weird, too, is I can't think of one time where Joe Rogan has said, do not get the vaccine. Vaccines are bad. Vaccines can hurt you. He has questioned whether or not you should give vaccines to children. I know if you haven't watched the interview with Dr. Sanjay Gupta, the chief medical correspondent from CNN, that was a great interview where essentially Joe Rogan just kept asking questions. And so I think that as you and I, as thinkers, you know, this is my take on it. So I'm like, okay, what do we do? When you've got the national media saying, because Brian Salter, the CNN head of news at CNN, he basically said something to the effect of, when you have talk show hosts like Joe Rogan saying this or that, well, you know what? I'll tell you what. Why don't we just say, I want to comment exactly on what Salter said.
Did not mention Joe Rogan at all, but Rogan's at the center of this because of the guests he's had on his podcast and the anti-vaccination narratives coming out of this popular podcast. Here's what Rogan said in an Instagram video overnight.
My pledge to you is that I will do my best to try to balance out these more controversial viewpoints with other people's perspectives so we can maybe find a better point of view. I don't want to just show the contrary opinion to what the narrative is. I want to show all kinds of opinions.
Which sounds great, but not all opinions are created equal. You think about major newsrooms like CNN that have health departments and deaths and operations that work hard on verifying information on COVID-19. And then you have talk show stars like Joe Rogan who just wing it, who make it up as they go along. And because figures like Rogan are trusted by people that don't trust real newsrooms, We have attention, a problem that's much bigger than Spotify, much bigger than any single platform, Kate. But that's what is the heart of this right now.
So there you have it. And there's so much there that really is pretty obnoxious on its face. So he said Joe Rogan just wings it. Okay, well, remember what I said about how they have these meetings to determine what you and I need to know? That happens in major newsrooms. And I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying it's a thing. Joe Rogan, he doesn't necessarily wing it. He comes in curious and asks questions to get to the bottom of whatever is on his mind at that moment. And then it's Stelter is complaining that they have these big newsrooms with research and they do all this work and Rogan just wings it. I'm reminded of a story from whenever I was in undergrad and I'm sitting in it was a fraternity meeting for IFC, Interfraternal Committee or whatever, where all the fraternities, they meet to determine how Rush is going to play out or whatever. I know, really, really serious business here. But I remember there's a particular fraternity on the Stephen F. Austin State University campus that sat in that meeting and the president of the fraternity was griping that Rushies were not coming to their house. Now, this was a fraternity of basically douchebags and meatheads. And the reason why the Rushies were not going to their house was because they were douchebags and meatheads. And they knew they weren't going to pledge that fraternity, so they weren't going to waste their time going. Well, here the president was in an IFC meeting complaining that we should force the Rushies to go to every house, to which I stood up and said, hey, why don't you instead make your fraternity a place where the Rushies want to go? It seemed pretty simple to me. It appears that's what's happening now. People are so disillusioned with this absolute fire hydrant of information that's coming at us at all times that the old trusted sources, when they lose credibility, and Joe Rogan, we're talking about one guy, again, who started his podcast, first of all, podcast versus an international news outlet. Okay, so if you just were to look at this from a business model standpoint, and if Joe Rogan had come along and said, you know what, I have an idea, here's how we bring down CNN. I'm going to get into the communications business. I'm going to start a podcast. It's going to be a talk show, and I want to compete with CNN, ABC, NBC, CNBC, MSNBC. That's who my competition is, and I'm going to do it with a microphone, a recorder, and a service like Blurberry or Anchor or something else. What do you think, guys? People would have thought he was freaking nuts. How does this happen? I mean, let's just step back and look at this logically. How in the hell does a comedian from Fear Factor become more trusted and more listened to than people that have spent their entire lives with, as Brian Stelter said? You know, Brian Stelter, I would think he would sit there and go, instead of complaining that people listen to Joe Rogan and trust Joe Rogan over him and saying, you know, we have these researchers, and we've got Sanjay Gupta, and we've got all these resources behind us. How, you know, complaining that people are trusting Joe Rogan over them, one would think he would step back and go, this is crazy. What is going on? We have all of these resources. We are the most trusted name in news. That's their slogan. How is this happening? What might we need to do differently? But that's not what's going on. And the weird thing is, I don't see any evidence that Joe Rogan ever set out for this to be a strategy. So I started, you know, again, I look for answers to not only, I don't need to know what others necessarily, like the bigger picture for me in all of this, and I hope it is for you, is not so much who's right on this issue. Does CNN suck and Joe Rogan is amazing, or is Joe Rogan, is he a meathead and he sucks and CNN is who we all need to learn? That's what we need to get to, is like discovering for ourselves, figuring out how to process this information, understanding the human mind, understanding the amygdala that is our fight or flight part of the brain that latches onto fear, be able to calm that, process information correctly, and then make decisions on our own. That way we can sit down and we can watch CNN and go, that's bull crap. Oh, that makes sense. That, okay, I'm with you there. Joe Rogan, that's bull crap. Oh, Joe, that makes sense. Ah, Joe, you're showing your ignorance there, because we've done our own research. We've compared it, and we actually can think for ourselves. That's where I think we should get. And so I actually made notes on from this book, Think Again by Adam Grant, which essentially it helps you to understand how to process different points of opinion. How do we take these things into account and make better decisions so that we don't just dig in our heels on an issue, dig in our heels on another issue, and then never leave ourselves open to learn anything? And so here is something I thought was very applicable to what's going on right now with Joe Rogan and the whole Spotify issue. So Adam Grant, in this particular instance, he's using the analysis or the analogy of climate change. How essentially, if we fall into this rut, if you will, of thinking that there are two sides, there are either absolute evangelists for climate change, or there are flat earther climate deniers. Those are the only two camps, and there's no nuance. If we do that, then we are limiting progress. That is his argument. And so I was reading this, and here's what he writes. It's especially important to distinguish skeptics from deniers. Think about that for a moment. Skeptics from deniers. Skeptics have a healthy scientific stance. They don't believe everything they see, hear, or read. They ask critical questions and update their thinking as they gain access to new information. Deniers are in the dismissive camp, locked in preacher, prosecutor, or politician mode. They don't believe anything that comes from the other side. They ignore or twist facts to support their predetermined conclusions. As the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry put it in a plea to the media, skepticism is foundational to the scientific method, whereas denial is the a priori rejection of ideas without objective consideration. So I ask you, my fellow listener, and hopefully just attempter to figure this stuff out, of the two, and I just want to ask you, of the two organizations, which one, Brian Stelter at CNN, who does have a lot riding on his credibility for the shareholders of, I guess Time Warner still owns CNN. I think they're up for sale, but I think Time Warner still owns them. But the boardroom that he has to please, there's a consumer base, there's advertising. It's a big money marketing machine with thousands of employees, correspondents all over the world. Okay, so he has that agenda, and he has something that he has to be responsible for there. Okay, so he has an agenda. The bottom line is, do you think they have a big, I'm sorry, I just did some preaching. I said they have an agenda. Forget that. Do they have an agenda? That's the question. Or Joe Rogan, who's just one guy in a little studio asking questions, which one is better applying the scientific method of skepticism? Healthy skepticism. Which one is driving home a narrative? Now, Brian Stelter said that Joe Rogan is promoting a anti-vaccine narrative. And we know that CNN, now this is a fact that they are a pro-vaccine narrative that they're supporting. And that's, okay, that is what it is. Again, there's two sides to this. But what if there's some nuance? And I think that which one, I'm asking you, and I would love to hear from you, which one, if you have listened, please don't just use the library knowledge that, yeah, I know what's going on over there at CNN, and I screw that, I don't have to listen to him. Joe's right, he's the best. Or vice versa. Please don't write to me and go, Joe Rogan, he's the man, whatever, CNN sucks, either, whatever the case may be. Look and just at the two parties and go, from what I know, from what I feel and what's happening in America and what I've read and what I've seen before my very eyes, which one of these two entities is asking the most questions and has displayed openness for more nuance, more skepticism? Because I think that is the heart of what's happening here, is there seems to be from politicians, health professionals, American media, there is this absolute fear. It's fear and hand-wringing and then anger over skepticism on certain topics. We're not even allowed to ask the questions. And that's scary. And that boils down to all Joe Rogan does. And again, I'm not a defender of Joe Rogan. I don't care. My life will not change. If Joe Rogan goes away tomorrow and we never hear from him again, my life doesn't change except for this. He's obviously become, much like Jordan Peterson did in certain areas, he has become a voice of non-political commentary, which is so refreshing and so needed right now. I don't believe, and that's why I brought up Peterson with Rogan, is I think these are the two most prominent figures, in particular in American life, that do not have a political agenda. Neither one of them need the money anymore. Neither one of them are asking you or I for their vote. Neither one of them need you or I to do a damn thing for them to have a happy and fulfilling life. They can, just like I said, if Joe Rogan goes away tomorrow, my life doesn't change at all. Well, guess what? If all of the millions of downloads stop tomorrow, Joe Rogan's going to be just fine. He's going to be kicking it in Austin with his bow and arrow, doing MMA, working out, and having a pretty sweet life. Jordan Peterson is going to continue to listen to classical music, write and read books, and be just fine if he never puts his mouth in front of a microphone ever, ever again. Yet, this is what I was trying to say with Brian Stelter and the folks at CNN. That's not the case for them, and I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying they are in a world of less independence. They are in a world of shareholder involvement, business, corporate, colleagues, and then because of their fame and the fortune that has gone with that fame and the life that they get to lead as a result of that, they have a lot more at stake than either Joe Rogan or Jordan Peterson. So I think that needs to be taken into account. I don't know. I wanted to bring this up mainly to challenge you as my audience, my listeners, to just take us as a moment to go, why is there such fear of skepticism? The scientific community, we hear a lot about anti-science, but it's one thing if you have someone deny facts, if they deny a proven hypothesis. Understandable. That is someone who is absolutely a denier. And, you know, what are you going to do? And there's a whole host of reasons why they might be doing that, because you might be challenging their values. You might be challenging all sorts of things. There's a whole science behind that. But when it comes to calling someone a denier and then wanting to completely shut them down simply because they ask questions, or rather yet, they ask questions of experts who have a differing opinion from a nationally created narrative, then there's two things. One, why are they so fearful? And two, which of the two makes you think, these people really think I'm a freaking idiot. They think I'm so stupid and so mindless that it is a danger for me. They're trying to make your brain a seatbelt. They're trying to say, we, the national media, and we, the government, we need to put a seatbelt on the brain and the eyes and the ears of the American people, lest they hurt themselves by listening to Joe Rogan. Now, that's pretty damn scary. So here's what I would challenge you, this audience, to do, is to prove them wrong by becoming a better thinker, by being someone who can take information in mass quantities and distill it down, understand how your mind works, train your brain to process what you read better, to think on it, and have the guts and the nerve and the courage to dive straight into a topic that you completely disagree with. That's one of the things that's brought up in this book too by Adam Grant, is that there's a, I didn't know this, but at Columbia University of all places, there is this lab where it's called a disagreement lab, where essentially they put two people in a room that completely vehemently disagree with one another. And they do experiments to try to figure out, can they, after going through this, can they find any common ground? Can they find any nuance to the arguments? And it's to me, that's a pretty remarkable thing. And so my challenge is for us, for myself, and I hope you will take on the challenge as well, is to look at this and don't just have the visceral, what a jackass, he's a jackass, I'm not listening to that one, they're right, they're wrong. But instead go, okay, objectively speaking, what are the facts, and what do I think, and what do I believe? And, you know, I just bring this up. I will put in the show notes a link to Robert Malone's site. I'll also put a link to the Joe Rogan interview with him. I'll probably, if I can remember, I'll include the interview with Sanjay Gupta. I think that, and again, this is not about being a fan of a certain podcaster for me, and it shouldn't be for you. It should be something bigger. It should be, this is really, really important. And what it's showing me is it's more important for us to be able to think for ourselves and to process information accurately on our own more than ever. Do not take for granted. You know, I'm constantly saying improve always in all ways. And a lot of the things I talk about, the reason why I read a book a week, it's not because I'm just thirsting for the knowledge that's in all 52 books throughout the year. It's to make me it's like lifting weights. It's like doing pull-ups. It's like eating right. It's what I know to exercise my brain so that I can at least be a little, and I am not a natural learner. I'm not the naturally gifted academic person. It's not me. I need help. So I'm sitting there going, oh my gosh, there is so much information out there. There are so many things I want to learn. I want to accurately portray and digest and understand so that when my daughters come to me and they go, Dad, what's the deal? Do I get a vaccine? Don't I get a vaccine? Is there any nuance? Is there any reasons why I shouldn't? Dad, when it comes to Abby and I have these conversations all the time. We talk about the environment, you're going back to climate change and everything. She's in Boulder, Colorado, for crying out loud. Okay. So obviously there's a guy there called Earth Dude that rides a bike around with a little earth hanging off a helmet. The dude's awesome. I've seen him all the time. You know, it's Boulder. And so Abby and I have these conversations about what is climate change and is it real and what are the ramifications? What are the economic impacts for the globe, for America, for the all the way down to us as the individual? We have these conversations. It's not a matter of climate denier, environmental wacko. It's neither. If you break everything down into there's only this side and this side, and there's no nuance, there's nothing in the middle, there's nothing that can be discussed, then we run into a tribalized, divided people that we seem to be right now. And so I encourage you as this listening audience to listen to all sides. And just be able to disseminate for yourself and challenge yourself to dive in and try to figure out how you can be a better skeptic and take a scientific approach. And, you know, the book that I just reviewed, I think I reviewed on the YouTube channel, called How to Have Impossible Conversations. This is the thing these authors said. When you take a scientific approach, which means being skeptical and asking questions and have a true desire to learn and understand a topic, you will in fact be infinitely better as a result. Okay, so that's it. Check that out. And I know this is one of the longest Best Fridays ever, but really I was kind of passionate about this. I want to learn. I want to be better. And I hope that you, as a result of hearing some of this, maybe it made you think and go listen to some of these episodes, go listen to both sides and figure out how you're going to process this information. Because guess what? It's not going away. There's going to be more. We are learning at an exponential rate. Communication and innovation is moving in such a fast pace that nothing is going to slow down. So get your mind prepared to disseminate the information and do with it what you believe is best for you, your family, your loved ones. And until we talk again, I hope you have the best Friday ever, best weekend ever, best 2022 ever, and continue to try to improve always and always. Also, listen up for next week's podcast. It's going to be a good one. I'm bringing back Dr. Ruth Simmons, a really incredible human being, former Goldman Sachs board member, former Texas Instruments board member, and former daughter of a sharecropper in Grapeland, Texas. And by the way, the first African-American president of an Ivy League university right out of Grapeland, Texas. Ruth Simmons' story is one of my favorites. I love that conversation. And it was one of the very first Texas Titan episodes I ever did. I'm bringing that back into the Jason Wright Show. So that will be next week's episode. Listen to that. If you have not listened to my most recent episode that's running this week or that I launched this week with my buddy Mitchell Cohen, it's part of the Iron Sharpening Iron series. That one is really good. And in fact, I think what's going to be the most popular segment in that whole interview is going to be the last like 20 minutes where we talk about relationships. Mitchell asked me a really fun and cool question. He said that he noticed that Mrs. Wright and I have a spark, if you will, in our relationship. And he wanted to know where that came from. How do we do that? And there is nothing I like talking about more than why I love Jemalyn Wright. One of my favorite topics, and so we go pretty deep there. He really asked a great question that I had a lot of passion behind the answer. So check that out. And until then, subscribe to the Vitruvian Letter. I'm wrapping up this week's. It'll be out this Saturday. The Vitruvian Letter. You can subscribe to that at jasonrightnow.com. And until then, I'm out.